Good morning. We're finishing up our series, Beauty for Ashes, this week as we consider our church's vision to be a home for the new humanity. We understand this on three levels. The first two levels we talked about in previous years, and this year we're talking about the third. Now, first, we understand that we're called as a church to care for one another as the family of God. It informs every aspect of how we treat each other. And that this, at a very personal and relational level, is a vision of the new humanity. Next, we understand that we're called to care for our neighborhoods, that Jesus sends us out to love our neighbors, and that this, at the local level, is a vision of the new humanity. And thirdly, we understand from this current series that we are called to engage in the culture of the land, that Jesus calls the church to care for the soul of the human race, and that this, on a national and global level, is a vision of the new humanity. Everything we do as a church is about creating space for God to reveal what this new humanity looks like in our relationships, in our neighborhoods, and in the broader culture. And over the last month, we've been exploring this last sphere of engaging our nation's culture. You see, we recognize the world of ash that we currently live in, a world of broken systems, of injustice that has recently been displaying some of the ugliest parts of our humanity. Now, ash in the Bible is an ancient symbol of lament, mourning, death, and outrage, a fitting symbol to embody our emotional reaction to the current state of our country. We've been exploring how our culture, the systems and structures in our society is really, they're really sort of bent out of shape right now. But where does all this culture come from, except from the people themselves? Racism, injustice, pollution, power dynamics, division, these all come from people. And I'd say the state of our people right now is becoming kind of toxic. The nation is becoming more divided, more hostile, more stressed, and more fearful. And the pandemic around us only exacerbates everything because it's deteriorating our social connection to each other, causing humanity to drift more and more apart. Not to mention the stress of this pandemic from killing over 200,000 Americans in the past 7 months. And we can sense it happening, can't we? The unraveling of everything. The soul of our people is full of ash. I think of a garden that hasn't been tended to, with all these weeds sort of popping up. This culture that's full of thorn bushes and weeds. So what is the church called to then, at this time? You know, in the book of Revelation, the author John gives us an artistic description of the New Jerusalem. John is given a vision where he sees the heavenly city descending from God to earth. And an angel comes and carries John up to where the city is. And he's able to explore this place in a little bit more detail. And it's beautiful. It shines with the brilliance of jewels. It's got these high, powerful, and ornate gates. And the city itself is made of the purest gold. Now, if you think about ancient cities, they had these walls because they needed protection. And so one can imagine large, thick walls to defend a city against charging soldiers or a fleeing catapult. That's what everyone would have understood these walls to be for. Maybe there's a gate in these walls or gates in these walls with giant locks to keep invading armies out of the city. Now, the holy city itself had massive gates and walls, 14,000 miles high or 1,400 miles high. But these gates, they never close, meaning that there's no threat of invasion. And so if there's no threat, then why have them in the first place? Well, the text tells us that the walls are made of precious stones, jasper, sapphire, emerald, ruby, amethyst. These walls aren't for military defense. These walls are for decorating. God's bedazzled these things in a non-kitschy way, of course. The walls are made from jewels because the walls are actually made for beauty. But here's the really cool part. On the foundation stones of these walls, and even on the gates that go into the city are written names. Names of the 12 tribes of Israel and the 12 apostles. And so each portion of this wall represents the people of God and is ordained appropriately. And so the image that John gives us is that these stunning walls and gates that surround the city, they're actually visual representation of the beauty of God's people. Now, not physical beauty. They're not all supermodels, but the cultural beauty of God's people. The text goes on to tell us that through these gates, the kings and rulers of the earth arrive to the city carrying the splendor and glory of the nations. Author Andy Crouch identifies these items that they're carrying as being cultural artifacts of each nation. In other words, they're the things that make each culture beautiful in its own way. Food and artifacts, music and art, fashion, sports and games, all these things make cultures amazing and wonderful. Now, Isaiah 60 actually represents another look at this same event, describing camels from Midian, gold and incense from Sheba, and the ships of Tarshish, to name a few. Again, emphasizing that everybody in the world actually joins with God in furnishing this holy city. God wants each culture to add the beauty of who we are to this place. Crouch also points out that the word nations is the word ethnos, which means tribe or people, not groups defined by earthly political borders. And so maybe that might mean groups like people with special needs, or the queer community, or Hapa people of mixed backgrounds from the islands. Because you know Spam Musubi is going to be in heaven, right? Now the point is this. The God of all creation considers the beauty of the new humanity incomplete without us. Doesn't that blow your mind? The glory of heaven is incomplete without the culture that we bring. But perhaps the most relevant for all of us is to think about and consider the culture that the church brings. That, I think, is vital. Now, I'm not talking about cheesy religious merchandise. I'm talking about acts of love and compassion that we do here on earth. Those are the things that make it over to the new humanity. When we care for our neighbor, when we turn the other cheek, when we empower those without a voice, all those things make the culture of heaven more beautiful. Right now, our society is full of weeds. It's ugly. It's damaging. And it's spreading. But this is a moment for the church to be different than the rest of the world. When the world gets hateful, we bring God's compassion. When the world gets violent, we bring God's peace. When the world gets fearful, we bring faith. When the world gets ugly, we bring God's beauty. When the world gets lost, we point to Jesus Christ. The world needs us to be the church more than ever right now. And it might seem like a gargantuan task, but this is not foreign to the people of God. The plagues and epidemics of the past show us how the church handled scary moments like this in history. During outbreaks of disease in the past that killed large portions of the population, many would leave the sick in their families and in their neighborhoods behind while they fled for safety. And what happened was, the only social network that remained in these places was the church. It was Christians that stayed behind and nursed these people. There was no vaccine or antibody cocktail that people could get. There was no herd immunity at the time when they were there. So many Christians would themselves contract the disease and die while caring for others. As N.T. Wright reminds us in his book about God and the pandemic, Emperor Julian from Rome was actually trying to de-Christianize the empire after Constantine, but he complained that Christians, were so good at caring for the sick and the poor that they were better than caring than the rest of the population. And he had a hard time fighting against that work of the church. Now, in time, it was Christians that actually built hospitals and hospices, who made education available for everyone, and who continued to care for the poor in a profound way. You see, this was the church being the presence of Christ to the world. Now, what's particularly interesting about the Christian presence in the middle of pandemics or epidemics is their tactic. Andy Crouch discusses this in his book, Culture Making, where he says that the church, during the plagues of the past, would stay in these neighborhoods, the neighborhoods that they lived. And as they came upon the sick, all they would do was provide them with the most basic of human needs: food, water, and neighborly love. That's it. And what scholars believe happened was that with these basic needs met, this allowed many of these sick people to survive long enough for their body's own immune systems to kick in and fight off the virus. It just bought them enough time so that their bodies can heal themselves. The majority of the survivors, understandably, ended up giving their lives to Jesus as the result. And after the plagues had swept through the area, basically the only people left were people that the Christians, that these Christians actually saved, solidifying a strong presence for the church, because it was just Christians and these new Christian converts that inhabited these neighborhoods. Isn't that amazing? Just food, water, and neighborly love. That's all the church needed to help save the world from an epidemic. It's so simple, but it was also significant. Kind of like a slingshot and a stone from a river, or a couple of fish and some loaves of bread. It's simple but significant, like dropping your nets and following, like confessing your lips and just believing in your heart. It's simple but significant. Right now, our nation has forgotten how to listen. It's forgotten how to care. I think it's forgotten how to love. And who else but the church, by the power of God in us, can show the world how to do these things? Every act we make in this time needs to be an act of compassion and justice, of empowerment and healing, and of love and beauty. As Crouch says, the only way to change culture is actually to make more of it. We need to make more of the culture of heaven. And I believe that's our call in this time. In Isaiah 61, our anchor text for this series, we've been looking at these ancient words that the prophet used to describe the coming Messiah, and that Jesus himself used to describe his ministry on earth. And at the end of the first few verses, Isaiah talks about the Messiah and how he comes to bring beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and praise instead of despair. And then Isaiah describes the people that the Messiah has come to save. And he says this: they will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. The people become these plants that display splendor. Now, that word splendor in the Hebrew is actually the word beauty. You see, this is God's call and vision for us in this historic and critical moment to act and create culture in ways that display God's beauty. As N.T. Wright says, a garden is far less likely to grow weeds if we have been planting flowers.